Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Michael.
And this is
Whitetail Bro.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. Whitetail Bones.
Episode 3. Can't believe we're here.
I know. It's been a month, so Tyler says. Which we have a very special host today.
The guy who's been yelling at us to get another podcast out.
Everybody
thinks Tyler's just such a cool guy. And then behind the scenes, he's just...
You just gave it away.
He's just a boss. That's all he is, man.
Tyler Jones is our host.
Nothing, huh?
I don't know how to do these,
guy,
man.
He's a little afraid of the Whitetail Bones.
Kind of scared of the podcast world, man.
Yeah. Hey, it's okay.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, man. I'm really glad that y'all are doing one. Backed by popular demand. It's crazy how the audience had to tell y'all to do another one, man.
Yeah. Actually, Cassie Smith did tell me to do another one.
Yeah.
She said, "Michael, you have a voice for radio." I said, "I don't think that's a good thing, but
you
thank
you, Cassie."
You
said a
face, too. No, she did not say a face. She did not say a face.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, guys. I'm just honored to be on the Whitetail Bums podcast.
Welcome to the bum life.
I've been there before, bro.
I think we got welcome to the bum life
in
the past couple years.
I feel very bum right now. Bum tired.
Yeah. That 3:45 alarm this morning was not a very fun one.
No.
Yeah, I want to hear about this because I got a text at 7:20. And it said, "It's 7:20 and we still don't have two guys in the stand yet."
No. It was terrible.
It was... Tyler said we had a worse morning a couple days ago, but I think today might have been the worst mornings I've ever had as a part of the element.
I was more frustrated in that other morning.
Yeah.
This morning, I think my expectations were lower.
Yeah, I can get that. When you're walking in and the sun's rising behind you, it's just not a very good feeling, though.
No.
Like, you're just kind of freaking out, trying to figure out
the one thing
how
that
to set up.
It's tough for Casey and I. I think we've actually killed a lot more bucks since we have split up, and there's a lot of reasons, but one big reason is he and I could literally talk all day about anything.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, we will plan. We'll be like, all right, 20 minutes for this. Let's do 15 for that. Oh, actually, let's do another 5. Let's do 20 for that because you know something's going to happen. Let's add some time there. And by the time, you know, we're like, all right, we got to get up at 3:45. We got to leave at, 4:15 or whatever time, and by the time we get done, like, talking, when we get out to get in the boat or we get, whatever we're going to do, like, when we get in the truck and we're, like, looking around or when I'm loading my stuff in his truck or whatever, we start riding together, man, things get really tough.
I thought it was very interesting. Last night we were all sitting around doing the math of when we need to get up, and at some point we got to, like, a 4:40 10 or something. And Casey, like, we went and redid the math, and somehow it got to 420. I'm just not sure how we got that extra couple minutes.
Well, because he just came up with a number. And
he
it
was
just
like, this
it just
is
so
when
happened
I
want to be,
wake up and leave. So
yeah,
that's
it just,
where
just so happened to be a like random number that was close.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure they got set up in pretty good time, but we had to walk.
So did they drop you guys off first?
No, we went in the same spot. We hunted two different sides of a slough and or a bayou or whatever you want to call it. And bow. And
that's where I'm from.
Old bio. The side that they hunted was right near the boat, pretty close. And our side was like, I mean, it was at least, I never measured it under 6/10 straight line. I saw some sevens in there, but I wasn't being super accurate. But, you know, we probably walked 7/10 of a mile pretty easy, like walking in through all the stuff. And it was, you know, I had to cross a couple of, like feeders to that bayou and stuff. And it's just, yeah. The main reason that we were getting in so late, I did my first interview at 7:52.
Wow. Yeah.
I've
never climbed up the tree and immediately had to put an ND filter on in the morning.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Without saying much about where we are right now or anything, we got into a tree. We got to a tree that I thought was going to be the tree we need to get in. And it's, you know, if we'd gotten this tree, we'd have been hunting at a pretty decent time. It wouldn't have been bad. Sure. So, like, it's big at the bottom, but it's, you know, it narrows out a little bit. So, I've got these tethered one sticks, and they've got Amsteel ropes on them that are pretty long. I like it a lot. Like, they're probably at least 7-foot ropes. And so, I get this thing. The first one, like, I have to go up high. This is kind of a trick I've talked about on the podcast before, but I have to get the first, like, on some of these bigger trees, it won't go around at, you know, waist level. So, I go up above my head, and it's thinner up there, at, you know, 7 foot, and I can tie that on and add. I always carry a 3-step aider, so I drop this 3-step aider off, and I mean about near go to the ground nearly. It's probably 4 foot of
aider is that?
The Amsteel guy it's made it for Amsteel. Me. I don't even know if he's making stuff anymore or not.
Dude,
but
those aiders are really nice.
I like
and
them.
I don't want to say the brand that of stick we were running before, but those aiders will like pinch your foot if you're in a rubber boot. It is hard to not
foot size the size of Tyler's. You definitely
ain't. I don't know how he can even get up in them. But those ones, it's like a square. So when you put your foot in, there's no like getting stuck.
Yeah.
And, like trying to get your foot out and almost falling because you're trying to get your foot out.
And I appreciate those old aiders too because when you need them, you need them.
Yeah.
So, I appreciate them. But like it's handy to just have it come out, you know, and be there. But
yeah.
So we go up first stick and I go essentially an aider, like a 3-step aider plus 4 sticks. And I get all the way up. We're probably like, we're at least 16 foot, if not higher. I don't know.
You're up there.
I get up there and he sends me a platform. Like, hey, send me your platform. And I take, our platform and I put it around the tree, and this tree did not thin out very much. I had the rope maxed out, and it literally was 2 inches from going on there. In fact, did I get it on at some point on there?
No, you never got that one on.
Okay. So, I did.
You did.
Did I do that?
You, like, twisted it to the side and then put it on there and just got it on jank. And you looked down at me, and you went... And I was like, oh, this is not about to be good. This is something bad just happened.
Yeah, there was no tail on the strap.
Yeah, and you were like, I can't get it any more tight. I do not feel good about this.
I was hoping I could, like, fingertip pull that tail out a little bit and tighten it down, cinch it down. And I could not get the tail out because it was just that close. I mean, and so I was like, this is just not safe, man. I mean, we could sit there and be, you know, locked into the tree with lineman's belts and all that. But, like, it still just doesn't feel good when your platform gives out and you start falling down the tree, you know?
It's also really different when you're 20 foot up instead of 6 to 10. Like, it's a big difference in if you fall.
So I set up a platform, 4 sticks, and a 3-step aider and decided we should not sit in that tree. Mm-hmm. So we tore the whole thing down. Michael's like moving stuff while I'm tearing stuff down. And we rush over to this other tree. It's 15 yards away. It's not the ideal tree. It's got a lot more limbs on it and stuff that are kind of like little limbs that are in the way more than anything. And kind of make a lot of noise with leaves on them and stuff. It's an oak tree, but it's a little bit smaller. And anyway, long story short, we get up there, but it takes, you know, we were not settled and ready to shoot a like opening interview in the tree until 7:52.
Let me ask you this, because I've sat in a lot of trees with you. What up, Casey and Greg?
Wait, so.
Oh, y'all no.
Watch-alongs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. Tyler's making us.
But back to my question.
Michael hates it.
No.
I sat in a lot of trees with you, and a lot of them are complicated, but mm-hmm. you also pick the right tree a lot of the times. So, like, what are you looking for when you're trying to decide the right tree?
Hold that thought. I have an announcement for everyone. My wife thinks Whitetail Bums is awesome.
We already talked about it.
Yeah, we did.
It just depends, you know, like, there's a lot of experience that goes into that probably. But I think there's also like something we've talked about on the podcast before, but creativity is something that you got to look at too. And then as far as like choosing the right tree, I don't know exactly what you're asking, but you may be asking just like picking the right one.
Well, you always take your time like
choosing
the right tree.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of guys are just like, I'm just going to sit in that tree because mm-hmm. it looks good. But you take your time when you do it.
I do. In my opinion, if I hunted by myself, it would be different. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take quite as long. But you have to look at where all the limbs land and think about yourself as a right-hander and how you're going to get shots as a right-hander. A lot of people don't understand, but, like, they will, you know, put a ladder stand up facing directly where they want to shoot. And it's like, if you're right-handed, you got to square up. If you're left-handed, you got to square up the opposite way. Like, but you cannot just be facing and pull your bow back to your sternum, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to square up, just like if you're going to hit a baseball. And so you think about that, see where your platform will land, if it's going to be straight in that section that your platform is. And then I usually try to put my cameraman on my right-hand side. And so I have to think about his situation, if he can get in there on a close level with me or maybe slightly higher. Sometimes you end up a little bit lower, but not always. Most of the time it's even or a little bit higher. And then does he have shots? You know, can he video from that too? And then also just like how much cover has this one got compared to that one? How many shots? One thing that a lot of people do wrong, in my opinion, also is they'll set up in a good tree, but there will be a big bushy, you know, crown of like a smaller tree that is, you know, it starts at 6 foot up and goes all the way up to 15 foot. And it's right next to the tree that you're sitting in. And it's like, you can't really shoot off of it. You can't see over it or through it, you know, very well. Like when you've got leaves right in your face, you just can't see through that mess very well. So you can't see deer coming from that direction. Mm-hmm. So I like to pick trees that don't have other trees beside them too much. They don't have any blind spots, you know? So that's kind of generally my thoughts. And then I just think about wind and stuff like that. And, you know, if the wind is perfectly advantageous for you, it's probably not the best. You want to pick something that like you feel like the deer are going to move because they have a decent wind in some direction. It's not like on their tail, even though they will walk in on their tail.
They definitely will from time to time.
But that was a light wind too, yeah. You know. I mean,
very switchy.
Yeah, it's not like a just 15 mile an hour at the tail. So
I would definitely say your camera guys, I would say definitely one of your camera guys really appreciates not having bushes in front of him.
Yeah.
When it is some open,
like, where's he going with this?
Hardwoods. Don't be making that face, Casey.
Facey.
When it is oompin' hardwoods, it is camera guy's just best dream.
Oh, yeah.
It can't be any better. But
Deer don't like it. So.
No, raccoons do, though.
Raccoons definitely do. I can't wait for people to see the Nat Geo.
I was going to say, I heard you raccoon. Got some sick raccoon footage.
Wait, I don't know if the Element has better raccoon footage.
I don't know if people do, dude. Mm. It's going to be awesome. I hadn't seen it. I mean, who knows? Might be out of focus, but...
No, it's in focus. It is very in focus.
That reminds me, when I was editing Rut Fresh...
Oh, no.
KC said something about a cross... What was that about? What was that about?
I can't really answer.
Listen, dude. Northern people say crossed bow.
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, then never mind.
No, we do not. It is crossbow.
It's not a crossed bow?
No, it's not across the bow. Even though I guess it kind of does go across the bow.
Across?
Yeah.
No.
It makes a cross.
Okay, you're done with this podcast.
We also have Greg just walked in.
Greg.
And he wasn't on the last Whitetail Bone
podcast. Does he need to get my headphones?
That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Maybe we take a break here and get Greg on because hop on he's got some things to talk about.
Just hop. The hop wants you to hop on the podcast.
The hop has requested.
Thanks for joining, though.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Yeah. Thanks for the question, Michael. I hope you can... get that Inside Out shirt off and get you a shower at some point. Y'all don't have to do this much longer. But.
No.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land? Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
All right. What's up, Greg?
I'm here.
It's been a while since the last time you're on this.
Been a little busy.
You've been hunting like pretty much all November.
Yeah, surprisingly.
How many days were you hunting your property?
I went down there the first time, and I probably got to hunt 5 straight days. It was, as a cameraman, I did not expect to get to hunt 5 of the premier hunt days, and you know, the first part of November. But
you had some good days though, right?
Yeah, I saw a lot of bucks, but I haven't put in the work on my property to like set it up to be like really huntable for the rut. Like, I've got a couple feeders and a couple of setups, but it just, like, I have no trees, like, prepped to, just hop in a saddle and go hunt, so.
There's not a lot of trees around, from what I remember. I mean, there's a few here and there, but it's a lot of.
It's a lot of thick, like thick, nasty cedar, and, like, there's some live oaks, but, I mean, unless you, like, get in there with a chainsaw and, like, cut some shooting lines.
A lot of trimming.
Is that what makes the turkey sit up in that one tree, you think?
Yeah,
I can't think of the word. Roost.
Yeah, the roost tree. They like those live oaks right there on the edge there, and they can.
Dude, he was roosting in the same tree every time he would roost on Greg's property. It was awesome.
Man.
Yeah, we're talking about a turkey I killed in this past spring. I think that video will come out this spring.
Yep, this coming spring.
But that was pretty cool. Casey got to film that one.
Dang, dude. Casey just took over from where I started. I'm jealous.
But anyway, the property is not really. I haven't done much work to set it up for bow hunting, especially during the rut, because I have a couple setups on feeders. But other than that, it's kind of hard to hunt. But
so, did you hunt mostly on feeders or in between, like trying to work movement going to feeders?
Yeah, on the first trip, I was mostly just trying to get where I could see, and I got up in the tree that I killed a buck out of last year, and it's one of the few trees that you can, like, get up, and I like that tree because you can see a lot, but you're not really intruding too far and messing things up.
Access is real good on that tree.
So I can just, like, hop out there, get up in that tree, and I can see some stuff, and I can slip out without messing up too
much. Dude, when we were turkey hunting, obviously, it was in the spring, so it was, you know, a little different mindset. There were deer going everywhere. I could not believe all the deer that, like, we were pushing out of there. I was like, Dad, gummit, Greg, you got a spot over here.
Yeah, it's been, the last couple of years have really picked up there because, like, my neighbors, like, quit hunting.
And that will definitely do it.
Last couple of years, I've started to feed all year long on the feeders. Oh. So I'm trying to hold deer all year long, and it seems to be paying off.
Are you primarily throwing corn, or what are you throwing?
I got three corn feeders, and every once in a while, now this is my secret, but I guess I'll share it.
Dang, dude. Exclusive Greg right here.
Every time I go and fill the feeders, I'll dump a bag of protein pellets on the ground, and the deer, for whatever reason, they hammer that stuff after they're done growing antlers.
Interesting. Like,
the anywhere from the lead up to the rut, they just the mature bucks just hammer that stuff.
Golly.
And in October, that's a good way to kill one.
Yeah. So last year when you shot that buck, I was just wondering a little bit ago, was that your first deer you shot out of a tree?
Yeah.
That's what I thought, because you do a lot of ground hunting.
Yeah, I got a saddle, you know, joining the element, and that was the first deer I've ever shot out of a tree or out of a saddle. Shot deer out of a tripod.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the Texas brush country thing to do.
I can definitely see a tripod being real nice on your property.
I wish I had like five or six more of those things. But
we need a tripod sponsor bad.
For real.
I can't find any of the good ones, like. They used to make these, like, really good tripods, like, in Texas, and you'd find them. But now you got these, like, kind of cheaply made ones that are, like, at Academy or whatever. Yeah. And you got to assemble it all yourself, and it's got all these different parts and pieces.
So how many shooter bucks did you see that first week of November?
First week, I saw probably four to five that I would shoot. On that trip, I was kind of trophy hunting a little bit because I knew I'd get a chance to go back around Thanksgiving, and I thought that would be my best chance to shoot like a a giant.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I lose track of how many shooter bucks you have on that property.
They're there all day.
It was like the Greg.
Today was wild on the trail cameras. There was a buck locked down with a doe for like 4 hours.
Golly.
Dang.
The Moultrie app was literally just the Greg home property app for like a solid 5 weeks.
Yep.
We had to make those smart folders.
Yeah, seriously.
Because we had to like sort them out.
You got to keep Greg's those photos out of there.
But you went back on Thanksgiving, and what happened there?
Yeah, on my property, I try to shoot a buck before Thanksgiving because it kind of gets a little tough. Like, I feel like our rut peaks around November 7th and 8th. And you'll see some like hit and miss activity throughout the rest of the season. But for whatever reason, historically, I've killed bucks on or like the day after Thanksgiving, like a lot. Now, it might just be because I'm up there during that time, but I've killed like 4 or 5 mature bucks on those 2 days.
Feel like it might be, and this is just me completely spitballing, but the rut kind of winding down, I feel like they're just coming right back to those feeders and just really,
yeah,
not concentrating per se, but sort of.
Yeah, and that definitely plays into it. And I was reading this study while I was there, and
golly, studious.
And you know, there's a Texas Hill Country like study of like rut dates, and the far like one part of the Hill Country like peaks around 7th and 8th, and you go a little further out and it's like it's around Thanksgiving, and then you go a little further out, it's like early December. Well, I'm kind of right in between some 7th and 8th and some November 24th. So I think I have a little overlap of
Rut activity. Texas is a weird place.
So I think it's like 70-30 on my property, like 70%, you know, of the rut happens on November 7th and 8th, and
gosh,
you know, 30% is on Thanksgiving, because I always see some pretty good activity around Thanksgiving for whatever reason.
I've never been so confused about like when the rut is until I moved to Texas.
Yeah, it gets
like
complicated.
In some places it's normal dates, sometimes it's around Thanksgiving, sometimes it's in December. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah, it gets complicated like in the South.
But
like,
I guess that's what happens when your state's the size of countries. So
you could literally in Texas hunt the rut from September to January.
It's insane.
It seems like if a good cold front just comes through, they just do the rut thing, it seems like.
Yeah, if you're close to the rut and you get a cold front, like it goes crazy.
Snaps it.
Yeah. And that's what I saw on the first trip. The first trip was insane. Like there's like one day I saw like a buck every hour of the day.
Mm-hmm. What would a cold front be in the Hill Country? Like temperature wise?
I mean, any kind of like
just
15, 20 degree temperature drop, even if it's from like 80 to like 60.
Mm.
Like I can remember days in October, some years where like it'll drop from like being low 90s to like 70 all of a sudden. 75 is like the high, and that'll get the bucks like up cruising.
Mm, spooky.
So,
Michael, let me ask you this.
Oh, no.
Since you're from the Midwest, sometimes I get thoughts when it is just really cold.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, is it too cold for deer to move?
Oh.
Do you ever have that feeling?
No.
Because Tyler does.
Tyler's yelling about it because he don't like the cold. But
there's sometimes
it's
like,
too cold for Tyler to move.
It seems like, man, it is freezing. They should be moving, and then just nothing.
How cold are we talking here?
I'm talking like teens and like single digits.
I think, yes, they are going to stick on food, but they're still going to be moving early, earlier in the day.
Probably.
But they're going to be closer to the food.
Tyler says nope.
You don't think so?
I've seen some days. It depends. It's like relative to the place that you're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ohio might be different.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I've seen some days like around zero in Kansas where
just
it's
nothing.
Just too cold.
Unreal, like a map of no movement.
Oh, I don't like to hear that.
Yeah, if you get some crazy in Texas, I think it could shut down some stuff. But
I don't know. I've seen some trail camera pictures from the public stuff around home.
But it's
snow on the ground, real cold.
If you get snow on the ground,
I think there's snow on the ground.
If you get snow on the ground in Texas, deer go everywhere.
Yeah.
Like
That's like I've a once in 15 year thing.
Pretty much.
Because it's just ice otherwise. Once in 15 years.
So, was it after Thanksgiving when?
Yeah, well, I went down probably like the 21st, and I hunted a couple days, and it was pretty slow, and I was getting kind of down. I was starting to feel like, man.
You weren't going to get one.
Wasn't going to get one. I had this 9-point on camera that was like, hit his like eye swollen shut, and I saw him on the hoof one time, and he was limping like really bad. And I was like, I probably have a good chance of shooting this guy. He's blind and limping around. but one morning it was like, what was this? I guess it was Friday, Black Friday morning, and I went out, and right about 8 o'clock, have a doe come walking down the road and head straight to the feeder, and I keep looking behind her and. Here he comes. I see him limping down the road.
Old limp.
And he was, like, shadowing her and, like wouldn't leave the downwind side of her. And he was 15 yards from me, and he's about to walk, like, straight down the road, get right in front of me. I'm about to shoot him at 20 yards. It's about to be perfect. And for whatever reason, like, I've got some brush piled up around this, like, spot so that, like, deer don't go into the thicket with me. Mm-hmm. Like I try to keep a little barrier. Mm. And so I'm in there and he's at 15 and all of a sudden he just decides to come in here with me and he just hops over the brush and gets to like 7 yards.
Oh my goodness.
And so I'm like, I don't get buck fever really, but when I'm out of position like that, man, I start breathing hard and
got the Greg eyes going.
Greg eyes are going. I watched this deer. He yawned at like 7 yards. That was pretty cool. I didn't get any of this on film because I'm self-filming. It's just, he's not supposed to be there. He's supposed to be in front of the camera. But, and then he does a snort wheeze at 7 yards.
Oh, my goodness.
And I caught the audio of that, and it was pretty cool. The doe kind of freaked out. And like,
it's a good way to freak me out for sure.
Yeah, I was freaked out. But he gets to, so he's at 7 yards. And he's got an injured back leg, and that's why he's limping. And he kept turning his head to, like, lick his back leg, and he would do it for long periods of time. And he did it twice. I'm like, okay, if he does that again, I'm just going to draw and shoot him frontal at 7 yards.
Oh, my goodness.
And he turns his head to lick his back right leg, and I look at the doe. She's looking away. And so I have to move the camera arm out of the way to, like, draw back. And when I moved the camera arm, the doe caught me, and she bolts, and the buck is just standing there, doesn't know what's going on. And at this point, I'm convinced he's blind, because at 7 yards, I was able to, like, turn my body, like, 90 degrees and, like, pull my bow up, and he did not once look at me. And so I started drawing back, and I had a couple of creaks in my bow, and he didn't like it. He bolted
out of there.
Blind but not deaf.
Yeah, he can still hear pretty good. But he ran off, and I felt, you know, I'm like, my chances are
not good.
This is over. But there was another buck that was getting on camera, and he was cruising around the property pretty regular. He's a good 8-point. I was like, yeah, I'd shoot that if I see that. And so I decided to go to the same spot that night. And about 5:30, hear footsteps about 25 yards behind me, and he starts walking up, and he starts eating oats. I planted oats in this little, just a small little plot. Like I was going to get some rain. I planted it the last time I was down there in hopes that maybe Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I just tried it. I didn't know if it was going to, you know, when I went in there to hunt, I was like, oh, good. The oats came up. I was like, that's cool.
Golly, dude.
But he was eating oats, and he walked through the oat patch and kind of headed up towards the feeder. And on camera, like, he doesn't stay there long. Like, he usually just, like, walks up, maybe eats a little bit of corn, and he's gone within a minute or two. Like, so I knew I had to do it quick. And he walked out to about 14 yards. Mm.
Golly,
can't
dude,
do any better than that.
Turned his head the opposite direction. Uh-huh. I was like, all right, here we go. I drew back. I mean, he heard me draw back, and he whipped his head around, and it was too late.
Too late.
And
it's a quick bow.
Yeah. Yeah, I aimed. I'm used to shooting slow bows. So I aim at the bottom of his heart, and I hit him in the bottom of the heart.
Nice. Smoke, dude.
How far did he run?
He ran about 57 yards is what I marked it, and pretty easy blood trail. And
now when you're self-filming, how is the recovery trying to do all that?
Doing the recovery is hard. It's not the easiest thing. Probably the best thing to do would be, I only had one light. Casey just ripped off Michael's Crocs.
Golly, dude. Those things probably stink. I'm sorry, dude.
Got a little sweat to him.
Got a lot of sweat, dude, I'm telling you.
But anyway, yeah, self-filming a recovery is kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd recommend doing like a GoPro at yourself and then like filming in front. But I only had one light, so I'm like flipping around, changing the lighting, and then flipping it back around. And so it's a – I think I made a video.
And cool.
That video should be – out fairly
the
soon.
Footage is sick for film.
I got the shot on film. I kind of knew where the shot would happen. So
yeah, for sure.
I was like, kept it on that spot.
I don't think a lot of people understand how hard it is to kill a deer self-filming. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's by a feeder. I do not care. It is tough to get one.
And what's bad for filming, but at a lot of times you can be like, all right, I'm just going to kill this thing.
Yeah, definitely did.
And that's how you not get it on film.
Yeah, definitely.
But luckily, I was able to get this one on film.
Did you fully capture the Greg Eyes on GoPro or something?
The celebration,
fist
dude,
bump,
Greg Eyes.
Got a fist bump in
there's
there.
A lot of left, lefty fist pumps going down.
People don't understand how intense the Greg Eyes are. Greg sees a big buck, and it
dude,
is
it's
like,
anything.
What do you mean? It's anything?
When we went with Brian to hunt hogs, and Greg took the rifle to shoot that coyote.
Oh,
dude,
I forgot
like,
about that.
This man's on a mission all of a sudden.
That's when we knew Greg was going to be a killer.
What are you making?
Eggs.
Eggs, cool.
There we go.
Well, sweet, dude. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun. And he's probably the second biggest buck I've shot on that property with the bow. So
first nice one was last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, last year's buck was a toad.
Tank.
But this one is no slouch, and I was lucky to kill him.
Well, Casey's whipping us up some eggs right now. We're hungry, so Tyler just had a video release on the Meat Eater channel from South Dakota, so be sure to check that out, and hopefully we will record another one of these.
We need to record another one before we all go our separate ways for Christmas. For
oh, yeah,
sure.
We will. So thanks for listening, guys.
See ya!
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon, and May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.